Back to Lions Collective. We're live every single week. Today, it is on a Thursday to recap what Dan Campbell said at the owners' meeting. We have Justin Rogers to talk more about the Taylor Decker article that came out this weekend. You can read Detroit Football Network. He is joining us, as always, Colton Pouncey from The Athletic, Will Birchfield from 97 on the Ticket. I'm your host, Jeff Iafredi from Crunch Time Sports. Packed show today, fellas. Dan speaking, Taylor Decker, Frank Ragnow, Rod Wood. He's retiring, and he's going out with a bang, it looks like, over the last couple of days, man. Shout out Rod Wood. How are you guys doing today? I know you got guys coming back from Arizona, and we're doing the show the same day. You got Will. He's busy this week. A lot of things going on for the fellas.
Man, I'm exhausted, Colton. I don't know about you. Like, I don't sleep well when I'm on the West Coast. I think I got up at 3 in the morning twice last week, 4 in the morning twice. Took the red eye back. You took the red eye back, so, like, I don't know. I'm thinking 11 hours of sleep tonight, maybe.
I thought I was going to sleep like a baby on the flight back, and I did not at all. And then when I got back to Detroit, I was wearing shorts and T-shirt, and I was like, I forgot it's cold here. So that was kind of an adjustment. So kind of slapped me in the face when I got off the plane this morning. But we're doing a little bit better. I got a little bit of sleep.
Hey, only Rich Silva sleeps like a baby on the plane.
What'd you say?
Sorry. Go ahead, Will.
No, I just said 73 tomorrow for opening day, baby.
Hey. I'll take it. I'll be out there tailgating. You might see me around.
So I know you will. I'll find you.
You know me. I'm gonna be down there too.
There we go.
Hey, good time of the year. Shout out. I'm glad it was supposed to rain, but now we're looking a little better. Now we're looking great.
Shout out April and D, man. Shout out April.
Yeah, baby. Let's roll.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll just jump right into it. For those who are watching, we appreciate you. Subscribe, like the stream as always, pushes it out in the algorithm. We'll start with the Taylor Decker stuff, and I'll go right to you, Justin, on it, because while you were out in Arizona, you were a busy man. You got a chance to catch up with Taylor Decker. Can you kind of just go through? I know the article, you can go read it, everything that was discussed in the interview, Detroit Football Network, but just from your perspective, how that came to be and just your experience getting to talk to and get Taylor Decker's side of the story here.
Yeah, I'll do my best to do cliff notes here. I originally reached out to Taylor in early February. My pitch at that time was, hey, let me come to your house, kind of meet with your family and do a story kind of on the decision that you're facing here, whether you decide ultimately to retire or come back. You know, that situation was so wrapped around his family. And I just thought it'd be nice to get that perspective, to get really their perspective. I wasn't going to be interviewing his two-year-old daughter, but his wife, you know, right? Like, and to see kind of some of the family dynamics that play into it. Obviously, he asked for his release. I texted him that day, kind of mocking that my story idea was dead. Came back to it and said, hey, you know, if you're still open to maybe talking, I'd be interested. And we went back and forth for a while and ultimately decided, yeah, he'd be willing to sit down. And so I went out to his house on Friday. It's unusual. I can tell you the last time I was at a player's house. It was for charity event more than a decade ago. And was there for like 3 hours. And, you know, we just kind of dove into the nitty gritty. We had talked to Brad Holmes earlier in the week. So we kind of got at least a little bit of his perspective. We got a little bit of Dan Holmes Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes' perspective at the combine as well. And I really wanted to establish a timeline of kind of how the whole thing broke down. And then, you know, it really kind of spilled into Decker's feelings and thoughts about the situation. And I'm trying to choose the right word because it sounds negative to say emotional or sensitive, maybe wears his heart on his sleeve. Like, Decker is a more emotional guy, right? Like, we've seen it with trade speculation in the past. We've seen it in milestone moments of making the playoffs or playing in his 100th game or even the kind of the conversation around his retirement at the end of last season. And so, you know, viewing it through that lens, you know, I think he struggled with some of the communication from the team throughout the process. And I really think the straw that broke the camel's back for him was Hank Fraley not reaching out. Like, they were so close for so long. Decker went to bat for him. And I don't know why Hank Fraley didn't reach out there. I will say that they have since communicated and are good. But when your position coach of 8 years doesn't reach out when you go through the situation, you know, just different things flow through your head. Oh my God, you know, is there a directive from the organization not to talk to me? Like, what's going on here? And so I think that compounded the problem. I know at least as of when I talked to him on Friday, he still hadn't heard from Brad Holmes through the duration of the offseason. Interesting thing that was hypothesized to me by multiple members of the organization this week is that Decker might not have had the right number for Brad Holmes. I will say that that is possible because the number I had for Brad Holmes no longer works. it adds an interesting layer, but I also think that after a month, if you still haven't heard from your GM, you know, it still falls at least a little bit on Holmes in terms of that communication. But, I think the situation's kind of playing out exactly what I thought it would. I think that the Lions heard it. They recognized, hey, maybe we should have done a better job communicating. Dan said kind of perfectly, like, I'm not going to call him now because it looks like I'm only calling him because of your article, but
yep.
I was always going to call him. I'll call him eventually. And he spent a lot of time, I think, very intentionally praising both Decker and some of the other guys that have left this organization, what they've meant to this team, to getting them to where they are now from, you know, cellar dweller to true contender.
Yeah, Justin, I think it'd be helpful if you walked some of the audience through like the timeline of these conversations as they were taking place. I obviously want people to read the story, but do you think that'd be helpful for people listening?
So this is Decker's perspective, but I don't have any reason not to believe any of it. And the way I kind of put it is Decker was talking to two people, and Campbell and Holmes were talking to dozens of people. And so I think that his recollection is going to be relatively clear on this. He had an exit interview the day after the final game of the season. Everybody understood he was weighing retirement, correct? And so he met with both Brad and Dan separately. And the takeaways from those conversations were, A, we want you back. That was made very clear. B, we're going to probably bring in somebody not to compete for your starting job, but to backstop you in case you get injured or miss practice time. Exactly what Dan said they would do at the combine. He said he heard that or he read that, and he's like, zero surprise, knew that was coming. And then the third thing, and I think the language is interesting here, and I think it's the one a lot of people are getting caught up, but he said, and I clarified this three different times just to make sure I was hearing it right. He said that they told him, we know you're not interested in coming back with a pay cut. And so while I said, you know, pay cut wasn't discussed, I mean, it was, but it wasn't like in that way. Like, they didn't put a pay cut on the table. They basically said, we want you back and we know you're not going to come back for less money. So that was just the information he was operating on. They agreed that a March 10th deadline would be when they would want to know by, and preferably sooner, just so they could plan kind of the next stages of tackle if he wasn't coming back. He decided Sunday the 21st that he was coming back. He told his agent, he told LaCharles Bentley, his mentor and trainer, the morning of the 22nd, he called and texted Holmes, and I don't know if he called and texted Campbell, but he got a hold of Campbell, and Campbell said, great, talk to Brad about it. Look forward to more talks. Never heard back from Holmes, you know, mentioned that already. Maybe there was a phone number issue, kind of crazy, but it's certainly something that could have happened. The Lions met with his agent at the combine on Friday. So we're now talking 4 days after Decker reached out, and he should go back. On Tuesday, Decker announced it publicly. So about 30 hours after he talked to Campbell, he announced it publicly. He was coming back. People are saying, oh, was that a negotiation tactic? No. I mean, the guy was operating under the principles he believed, right? I'm coming back. I'm coming back at the deal that I was on. I'm super excited. I want to tell everybody. On Friday, the Lions tell his agent, we told him he can come back only if it takes a pay cut. That was news to Decker. He said he had never heard that before at any stage, that the only way he'd come back was take a pay cut. And so at that point, it became kind of a principled stance for him. Can't say it's the right one. You know, that's an individual decision. That's a personal decision that, you know, you feel you deserve what you're worth and you make your decision based on that. Also kind of in the tone that it was conveyed to his agent. And he said he rejected that idea immediately. Numbers were never exchanged, which I found very interesting. You know, so we don't know how much of a pay cut they want to take, but the agent relayed the tone of the conversation was significant. I think the way we've seen them operate in the past is kind of the the pay cut matches the cap savings with the cut. So I'm thinking in the ballpark of probably $8 to $10 million they were going to ask him to take. And, you know, he wasn't interested in that. So, you know, after a little bit of time, he requested his release.
Yeah. It's unfortunate, like, first and foremost, that it had to come to this, because Taylor was obviously such a big part of this team. The culture was here from day one when those guys got here in the building and kind of took them in as, you know, kind of one of their own for so many years. So see it come to this is a little bit disappointing. You know, as far as, like, I guess Decker's expectations of how those conversations would go, it seems like he was sort of trusting the fact that, you know, these guys have kind of defined themselves as the culture guys. Like, we're going to take care of our own. Like, I'm a core player here. Maybe I get to go out on my own terms. It seems like that was sort of his understanding, even though they did say, hey, maybe a pay cut. Like, obviously it was discussed a little bit. It seemed like he thought that the ball was in his court in some extent, to some extent. And obviously that wasn't the case. I'm curious if his agent was communicating well to him, the player. I'm curious what his agent's conversations were with the front office, with Dan, with Brad, because it seems to me like something was lost in translation. And I'm not trying to blame anyone, but it's a little bit baffling how it got to this point. And unless the Lions just truly had a change of heart and they're like, we need to put our foot down and we cannot have him back at this current salary, which makes sense given what we've seen with the tackle market, given that, you know, Decker's still out there available. I don't know what he's looking for at this point, but, you know, clearly there was some sort of miscommunication along the way. And it's unfortunate that it had to reach this point, but, you know, I understand him putting his foot down, being like, well, no, it is a principal stance, as you said, Justin, and certainly respect him for making that choice.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty interesting when we talked to Brad last week that when Justin asked him if he was either surprised or disappointed at the way things worked out with Taylor, he said, no, it wasn't a surprise and no, it wasn't a disappointment. I thought in that moment he was going to accept maybe some level of accountability for how things broke down, because from the outside looking in, even before Justin spoke with Taylor, this always smelled and looked like a communication breakdown, which has to involve both sides. And so I was surprised at like how casual Brad just sort of dismissed the idea of being either surprised or disappointed, because Taylor clearly was. Justin, I'm glad you brought up Dan's response to your question just in general about Decker and his feelings about it. And I think some people have misinterpreted Dan's response to mean that he was like offended or rankled by the story and therefore isn't going to reach out. It was clearly just he wanted his phone call to come off as sincere whenever he did make it, and therefore he didn't want it to seem like he was compelled to call by the story. The one thing I'm left wondering here is, and maybe Justin, you guys spoke about this and ultimately it didn't make the story. Does Decker feel like in some ways he misread this and maybe even misread the offensive tackle market the same way I feel like the Lions did this offseason? Like if he was going to ask for his release in potential hopes that he would land similar money with a contender elsewhere, that would be a move that he would probably have to admit backfire. Now, I don't know if he ever had any real intentions of playing for any team other than the Lions. I don't even know if there is a team out there that fits him at this point between having a needed offensive tackle and being a contender. Like the only team that I can conceptualize Taylor playing for other than the Lions is the Rams to reunite with Matthew Stafford, who might be like the player that Decker respects most in the NFL, but they have two very stable starting offensive tackles. And maybe the other one, based on the fact that Ben Johnson did reach out to him, mm-hmm. would be the Bears. But again, like, look, they brought back Braxton Jones. They do have a long-term offensive tackle, it looks like, an Ozzie Tripillo, but maybe there's a need there earlier in the season. I just think Decker is so aware and cognizant of his own legacy that he knows what it would do to his perception in Detroit if he went and played for the Bears for a season, probably haven't seen what it's done to Ben's perception in Detroit. So I wonder if Taylor thought there would be more options on the table for him than there were after he requested his release. I don't know. Did you guys, J-Raj, get into that side of it at all?
A little bit. I don't think he even was thinking like that, right? Yeah. Like he was just like, His sole goal, and I'm not even thinking about it, as he said this, like his sole vision was coming back to play for the Lions. Like that was his vision. And so requesting his release, he didn't really think forward about what was next. And mm-hmm. you know, I kept kind of hitting like, what is next for you? Do you want to play? And he just said, look, right now, all I can say is the right situation. I can't even define what right situation meant.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, you don't come back just to get $15 million from the Cardinals, right? Like, he wants to play for a winner, but yet he's kind of thinking about, like, is it cheap to go win somewhere else after you've invested all your energy emotionally and physically into this one franchise? I will tell you that he's pretty anti playing for the Bears or Packers. Yeah. It's just, that's the Lions, you know, background in him. Like, he, yep. I know Ben Johnson did it and that was the right situation for him, but like Taylor feels kind of dirty about the idea. Like, yeah. Just isn't interesting to him. So, you know, I think it's a situation where, you know, I could see him joining a team midstream as maybe the further he gets away from football and games are being played, like an injury happens somewhere, like that right offer emerges. I also could see him not playing. Right. I think, yeah. You know, there is a emotional disappointment and toll that all of this whole process took on him that, you know, it just might quietly end. And I know a lot of people reacted to the headline or maybe some of the paraphrasing of the story, but something that I thought was really important here is like Taylor Decker wants to be remembered as a Lion to the point where like he wants back in the fold, you know, once like wherever this season may go, whether he plays for someone else or doesn't, like he wants to come here. He wants to sign the 1-day contract. He wants to retire as a Lion. He wants to be able to show up at the games and celebrate their successes and, you know, be here if they have a Super Bowl win and a parade. Like he wants all of that. He wants like nothing but positive vibes long term, even though this situation deteriorated the way it did. I will say, and I'm not going to go into details because it wasn't an on-the-record conversation, but I did run into Dan Campbell at the league meetings kind of later and kind of had a little bit of a longer discussion about this piece. And, you know, like you said, he wasn't attacking in his response, but, like, we're very much on the same page and kind of understanding of how this thing came together. And it doesn't seem like there's any organizational animosity. Maybe Brad, I don't know, you know, we'll find out, you know, next time we talk to him, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know. In my opinion, it seems like there might be some organizational animosity with Anzalone based on how he was tweeting the last couple days when it has to do with the Frank Ragnow situation. But I guess we can kind of transition into that. And the simple question is, what side of the fence are you guys on? Because I think surprisingly, and I'll say surprisingly because it's my opinion, it's actually been more split of a conversation than maybe I initially thought it would be. Like, there's a lot of fans that are siding with the Detroit Lions, and there's a lot of fans that are siding with Frank Ragnow. I know Rod Wood said a lot of stuff that got people fired up this week, and one of the big ones was the Frank Ragnow stuff. So where are you guys at? I know Rod was asked the question as well about it, and he pretty much was – stood on business again. So respect to Rod. But where are you guys at with the Frank Ragnow stuff? What did you think of them taking the money that technically isn't his?
Jeff, where are you at? I feel like as like the diehard fan in this group, you offer a more interesting perspective than maybe the three of us. Like where did you come down on this and have you changed since?
I'm furious. I'm furious. I think it's like, I think the best way to explain it, like if I was not that I'm even qualified to give Rod Wood advice, but I said, hey, Rod, Sheila, if you could pay $1 million to just put this fire out, would you do it? And I think it's worth $1 million, in my opinion. I think Frank's worth $1 million. And I think the context, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong on this, this is how I interpreted it. I think the way in which he retired, didn't medically retire. So it allowed them to be like, hey, we're going to take that signing bonus back. But if there was a situation where he was declared, hey, he's not fit enough to play football and medically retired, he would keep the money. I think the feeling everyone has, though, is he's not able to play football. I know he came back and tried to play, but then he got injured again. Like clearly his body isn't responding like it used to be. So I think in good faith, the organization, Rod Wood, Sheila, should be like, you know what? This is a guy who's basically played with every injury ever, toughed it out, has an inoperable toe. Yes, they get paid a lot of money. I understand they get paid a lot of money to do that, but But I think when you look around the NFL and see organizations typically just do this, and the Lions are one of those teams that just consistently like to take back the money. And I understand it's Rod's job to you know, his job isn't to have feelings in that way. It's trying to save money and, hey, this is technically our money, so we're going to take it back. But I just think it starts a bad PR fire that probably isn't even necessary. And, you know, especially when it's gotten you in trouble with two of your greatest players in franchise history, it's probably not a good message to send to Frank Ragnow, and just to the fan base, really. So it was frustrating. I think this organization's made a lot of strides in a lot of ways, from like Brad Holmes down. But then there's this happens, and it just makes fans, I think, go, well, like, here we go. Like, this is where the three-letter acronym comes back out, because this is the stuff we were dealing with for a long time. So I hate it for Frank. He's a good soldier. But I think they should have just did the right thing. I don't even think really Rod needed to say anything, if I'm being honest. Like, I don't think he should have even said a word. But now that it's out, should have just let Frank keep the $1 million, in my opinion. He tried to come back. I mean, he deserves the $1 million. He tried to keep playing. So, yeah, that's where I'm at with it. And I don't think the whole fan base is that way either. There's a lot of fans that are like, shut up, Jeff, you're wrong. You know, he doesn't deserve it. So I don't even think I'm speaking for most of the fan base. I think that's just the section that I'm probably speaking for, to be honest.
Yeah,
we talked a lot in the early segment. Yeah, somebody else go.
No, I was going to say, I mean, he tried coming back to play on one hamstring for the team that he had given his heart and soul to and his throat to for one game back in 2020.
Yeah.
I think that's part of the reason you saw so many players, or a few players anyways, come to his defense. I think that Rod Wood could have done himself so many favors, either, as Jeff said, by simply not really addressing it publicly at all, or just by framing it differently. Like, I don't think the argument that because we set the precedent of pissing off two of our best players ever, we should therefore piss off another one of our best players ever holds much weight with the fans, with the players in your locker room, with anyone looking at this through any sort of emotional lens. If maybe he had framed it like, we are pretty pinched for salary cap space this year, and we felt like by taking the money back, we could sign a player, be it Isaiah Pacheco or Christian Isian, he probably would have garnered a little bit more goodwill and a little bit more understanding. But the message that he sent, to me, just didn't ring true. Like, it shouldn't be the case that just because you erred once and twice in the eyes of most of your players, you should therefore err a third time. I think you should take the reverse position and realize that you could maybe learn from a mistake. And if you do intend to take that money back because you need it that badly, that should probably be the way that you frame that decision.
Yeah, to me, it's three things. And it starts with the player. And obviously, Frank is a player that gave his body to this franchise time and time again, that played through so many countless injuries, things that just make you squirm when you even just think about the stuff that he was going through to just take the field. Like, it was nothing to him. Like, he was an Iron Man. He was the definition of that. And he played one of the most brutal positions in this game, where guys they retire and their fingers are all crooked. Like, that's sort of the thing that we're talking about here. This is the guy that gave his body to this franchise. And the fact that he tried to come out of retirement is more so that his teammates were like, hey, Frank, we need you. Please come back. Like, we could really use you. We think we can make a run if you're back here with us. And because I was told he was happy in retirement, but it wasn't until some of those guys started giving him some calls and saying, hey, you want to come back, you know, that he made the decision to return. And the fact that, you know, he had the failed physical, didn't even know it. He was walking around with grade three hamstring strain. Like, that's insane. The fact that he didn't even know that, really. So that's first and foremost, you got to start with the player that you're talking about. Like, and then the next thing I was going to say is the tone coming from Rod, right? Like, if Rod said this in a better way than like, oh, well, we made Barry do it, so of course we're going to make Frank do it, you know? That just comes off a little like pointless. Like, you didn't have to say that, man. Like, I think Rod's done some good things for this franchise. I think he's kind of grown into his role as president, really the last, you know, call it 3-4 years. He's done a lot of great things off the field. You know, I think his legacy was starting to be shored up a little bit on his way out. And I think this could have been a chance for him to go out on a high note and to just use this sort of tone with one of your franchise legends. Just comes off a little tone deaf. I really don't understand why he went there. I know he was asked the question, but like, could have, you know, framed it in a better way, as Bertie alluded to. And the last, I just think it's the context of what this franchise says they are. You know, they're, we can say it, but like, they've moved on. They say they moved on. We're a different franchise than what we used to be, the previous versions of what we were. And I know that extends to the culture and the grit aspect. And like, we're going to do things different. We're going to do things the right way. They've said everything that they need to say, but actions like this kind of go against that, in my opinion. It's a little bit weak because you're talking about a million, 1.2 million, I think is what it was. And I don't know if that number is right, but you know, you're nickeling and diming over 1.2 million to a guy that has put his body on the line for this franchise. That just seems a little weak to me and didn't necessarily love it, but it is what it is. It is their prerogative. They have every right to take that money back. Rod didn't seem like he was too upset about the optics hit that is really going on. And I would say among the fan base, it's probably 50-50 split, because even my comment section of my story, it seems like everyone's like, well, it's their money. They can take it back, right? And a lot of people were like, well, this is BS. I don't like this. So it was a 50-50 split in my comment section among Lions fans. If you just ask fans around the NFL, I think most fans would be like, well, that's wrong. So Lions fans are kind of coping a little bit, in my opinion, at least the ones that I've seen defending the franchise on this. But that's kind of where I'm at with it. And, you know, they have the right to do it, but it does come off a little soft when you say that you're changed, you're different. It makes it a little bit hard to believe that in some ways.
And real quick, I just want to add this before you go, Justin, like, go ask Colts fans. Like, they gave a check to Andrew Luck for $25 million and he retired. And Jim Irsay was like, keep it because you gave your body this $25 million. And we're talking about $1 million. Like, you're spot on with that. Ask other fan bases. It's like, this is foreign to most franchises, but sorry, Justin, go ahead.
No. It's interesting you brought up, like, you're surprised at some of the split reaction, and I'm not anymore. I used to be. The Calvin Johnson thing literally changed my perspective on this forever, because Calvin was like the quintessential fan favorite, like, did amazing things on the field, highlight machine, played through injuries, and he also got pissed off about $1 million or thereabouts. And the more he talked about it, the more fans turned against him. And it felt like at the end there, it was like 90-10, like, against Calvin Johnson. And it's like, all right, if you're going to turn against Calvin Johnson, you're going to turn against everybody. It wouldn't even be 50-50 if Frank was complaining. Like, it would be 80-20 in favor of the organization. That's just the way it is. Fans will choose the jersey over the player wearing it every time, I've kind of decided. I do think there is a time to reclaim signing bonus. I think with Barry, honestly, I don't have a problem with it, the way he kind of hung the franchise out to dry.
Well, and it was $7 million, correct?
Yeah. And gosh, I mean, $7 million against the cap then, it's like, that's right, 10%. Like,
you got to do what you got to do at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with Calvin and Frank, like, I don't. And I think part of it is, I don't know if any of you guys wrote about this, but it really kind of hit me the other day. Think about the way NFL contracts are structured, right? They are backloaded. And you see the first year of these deals, even with like these star players, they're playing on veteran minimum. Like, the signing bonus literally supplements them playing on veteran minimum and is a cap relief device for the team. They're helping the team out by taking a signing bonus instead of a base salary that first year. And so it's almost like you're saying, you know, thanks for doing that favor, but maybe give some of that money back and help us out a little bit more. And it just makes them feel like cells on a spreadsheet. I think Rod Wood's wording was absolutely tone deaf. You know, it's not their money, it's the Detroit Lions' money. And it's like, come on, man. Like, come on. Like, what are you doing here? I did get a call from an agent this week, kind of compounding with the Decker thing. And he's like, I, for my entire career, have told my clients, never in your exit interview, ever, ever, ever say the word retirement. Don't hint that you're considering it. Like, force them to make the decision ultimately, if that's the way you want to go. And I think, you know, interestingly, like, that's how it played out with Graham Glasgow. Right? Like, we asked him at the end, like, hey, what are you thinking about the end? And he's like, well, under contract. And and then when he gets released, what do you see? He's released with an injury failed designation that lets him keep his signing bonus money. It lets him address failed physical. That means he has a medical issue. That means the team has to take care of that for him. Like, that's part of it. And so, like, you know, whoever Graham Glasgow's agent is, did it right. Right.
Oh yeah. Big time.
Yeah, that's what Jason Kelsey was actually talking about as well. Like, there's I think this probably woke up even maybe some current Lions players. Not, I don't know if they'll be here for their whole career, but maybe in the future, like, you know, this maybe for other players as well. It's like, at the end of the day, business is business, but like, that's why I applaud Taylor. I'm Decker for at least being like, nope, you're going to have to cut me, man. I'm not taking a discount. Even though I'm like with them taking the discount, but business wise, I get it. I understand it.
Rod came in famously saying, I'm not a football guy, and he kind of goes out making a non-football guy move. Like, I don't think the president of an organization who had a deep football background would make this move, and I think it's one of the reasons the Lions, in their next hires, look for someone that has maybe a more intimate tie to the game than Rod Wood did when he arrived and ultimately when he's on his way out.
Who fixed the relationship?
Disner did with Kelvin. I mean, basically had to be handed off because Calvin Johnson wanted nothing to do with Rod Wood. And at some level, I mean, we shouldn't be letting Sheila off the hook, right? We shouldn't because
that's true.
I mean, I'm sure Rod is counseling her on this decision and she's just listening to him and taking his advice or whatever it is. But like, she has to be aware of the feedback here. She has to be aware of the perceptions of her organization. And, you know, this falls on her as much as anybody because it always goes up to the top. It always goes up to the top with the coach. It always goes up to the top with the GM. And in this case, it should go to the top with ownership.
Yeah, I guess I made this point the other day. I don't know how much of this was Rod versus Sheila or, you know, higher ups. Obviously, the franchise has a history of this before even Rod got there. So, you know, how much of this is on Rod? I think the point that's on Rod is the tone that he was using. That was sort of ridiculous, and he deserves heat for that. Yeah. But in terms of this decision, I can't say it's Rod's and Rod's alone. So probably not that fair to say that. But, yeah, I don't think Sheila should be let off the hook. You know, she came in here saying things are going to be different, and she had a chance to make this different, and it was a similar decision as we've seen in the past. So that cycle continued under her watch. So I think that's fair to say.
It is funny how many times just during his tenure, like, it feels like Rod said something that he had to walk back at some point, going back to the I'm not a football guy. Yeah. You know, when the Patricia stuff broke and our paper first contacted him, he, you know, without really having all the facts, I support my guy 10,000% or 1,000% or whatever. I was like, maybe hold off on that quote. And then this one too, it's just like, it just feels tone deaf.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll get into Dan's comments. He spoke about the defense. You got to ask him about the defense, that 11th player on the field. And he also mentioned the core in which they have, but I've noticed, well, we've all noticed, at least Dan and Brad, when we interviewed Brad Holmes, they both are back in Calvin Shepard. And I know you guys, I guess this is a great conversation for you guys, because I, from my perspective, I'm trying to like piece together the timeline of like combine, Calvin Shepard speaks, talks about his scheme, and then Dan talks about the scheme again. Like, I'm trying to pay attention to like, which way is this thing going to go? Are they looking to be more flexible on defense? Is there maybe something Calvin has in mind and which principles he wants to stay with? You guys have the most context because you've gotten a chance to speak to both. But what did you guys think of Dan kind of back in the defense, back in that, some of that flexibility that they can have with Nichols they signed, having another linebacker they can utilize, and just the defense as a whole?
It's clearly one of my favorite topics this offseason because I just find it interesting, right? Like, they haven't done a whole lot on defense. It feels like there is an incomplete nature of it heading into the draft. And so that's how I framed it to Dan. Like, what are you doing essentially? Like, what is this going to look like schematically based on who you did or didn't bring back? And he said, we're going to stick to our core philosophies, which to me is always falls around that word pressure, right? It's a little bit more man to man, a little bit more press man. It's blitzing on third down. It's about putting opponents in uncomfortable situations and, you know, whether you execute or not, but that's the idea. But in terms of that 11th defender, he basically said, like, there's a few different ways we can go. And it really just depends on how the roster shapes up with edge rusher, with linebacker, with the slot cornerback. And so I view that as a positive, because sometimes I think we look at this defense and it feels a little rigid, right? Like, you have to have this guy to plug into this hole to play this way. And I feel like this tells me they're going to go into the draft with their eyes a little bit more open, their minds a little bit more open to draft, I guess, an array of talent, and then they can work the defense around that 11th or 12th piece.
Yeah, I really like Dan's answer on that. And so good on you asking it, Justin. I, I thought it was interesting because we've kind of talked about it all offseason. Like, where can they go with this defense? Like, do they want to get more flexible? Do they want different body types at certain positions that we've known them to use in this defense? Like, can you get a little bit more multiple in ways? And how do you do that? So once they kept the defensive staff in place, which I think some of us were looking at, I didn't think they were going to like move on from Kelvin Shepherd, but maybe some of his assistants, and they really kept everything in place. And Dan reiterated the point, like, I love the staff. And he really enjoyed sitting down with those guys and breaking down what went wrong, what needs to change, like, how can they get better, when they kind of did that film review when the season ended. So, like, some of their conclusion is, like, okay, like, we have this defense, like, basically installed, and we have basically three different ways we can go with it. And to me, I kind of read his comments as depending on how we, like, put the finishing touches on the personnel. And obviously, at this point, I think most of that's going to come from the draft. Maybe, like, a you know, training camp trade, like right before cut day, but I think most of that work's gonna be done here in April. And so when I look at this draft, I think it's really rich with depth and just talent on really day two, day three, early day three at certain positions that I think can affect how this defense is played in 2026. And that's linebacker, it's nickel, it's safety. I think those are the three positions that have like sort of the flexibility, guys that can kind of do different things. They can, you know, a guy that can play linebacker on one snap and play big nickel on the other, a guy that can play safety on one snap and come down in the box the next. Like, there are different guys that can punch it out, guys that are more ball hawks. Like, there's a little bit of everything in this draft. So I think it sets up perfectly for what the Lions want to do. Now, obviously, they have two top 100 picks. That makes it a little bit tougher. But if you can find a way to either trade up with those fours and get back into, you know, late day two, or you can trade down in the first, which might be a little sketchy at this point, just based on some of their needs. But I do think there are ways to get that extra top 100 pick if they want to go that route. And I think maybe that like 70 to 100 range is sort of the sweet spot if you want to get another one of those players. So I thought it was interesting that he's basically like, we don't know what it's going to look like. Yeah, we love base defense because it dictates, but not if we don't have the personnel to play base. We still got work to do. There's no secret there. So I read that and I'm like, they're going to try to find impact players in the draft. And, you know, I'm curious to see how that looks because I think those guys are available and they can go a lot of different ways with that.
Yeah, it feels like they're all available in that sweet spot you're talking about too, Colt. Not all, but like most of the players that we're imagining in that like 70 to 100 range, like the Lewises, the Kilgores, the Bud Clarks, like all feels like they're all going to be that like second half of day two type pick. And so that would be a really valuable spot for the Lions to go back up into. One of like the weird trends of the Lions defense last season was how poor it was on third and long and fourth and long. That was something that Shep was still lamenting when we talked to him at the combine a month or two ago. Like, that's a spot where most defenses tend to thrive. Like, you can pin your ears back and you can put the offense in an uncomfortable spot and get after them. And for whatever reason, the reverse kind of happened last year with this team. And I still think for that reason that like the speed ball off the edge that we hear the Lions talk about almost dismissively sometimes is still something that this defense would benefit from in 2026. Like I, for whatever reason, have just kind of taken a liking to R. Mason Thomas in this draft process. And maybe like Cassius Howell is another guy who kind of fits that mold, but someone who doesn't have to be just a designated pass rusher, but could maybe serve that role early in their career, even if it's just like the first month or two of their first season before developing into like a more complete weapon. But I think that is also a position in addition to like the flexible safety nickel linebacker that the Lions should think long and hard about targeting. Like, it doesn't have to be the pillar you build around opposite Hutchinson, but it can still be a really valuable, impactful player who fills a hole that I think caught up to them at times last season.
Now, I know we have our, by the way, like our pick of the week, which big shout out to Dog and Pony Show Brewing. I actually have a fridge full of these things right here.
Let's go. Come on.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a Kernel Lager.
Dude, have one.
If you go, I have like 40 in the fridge, by the way. I actually don't have any water in that fridge. I just have Kernel Lagers. But if you go to Dog and Pony Show Brewing, you can get $1 off any beer, by the way. Use the words Lions Collective, mention us to anybody at the counter. You get $1 off the beer. And also, we're going to be doing our live mailbag there at Dog and Pony Show Brewing. Baby. So we're excited. We'll be down there hanging out with Kyle, drinking some more of these. Maybe Kyle will give me another 40. I don't know what's going on. Okay, I got too much.
Yeah, you
got
to crack that, Jeff. Now you have to crack that.
Yeah, you know what?
Yeah.
Yeah,
come on. Yeah. Stand on business, man.
They are always good, too. So shout out Dog and Pony Show Brewing, and I can't wait to do the mailbag with you fellas.
Hey, Jeff, give them the date on that live show.
So right now, I don't know exactly the date. It's what is it? It's like
how many Colonel Lagers did you have over there, buddy?
So I knew the date, and then I tapped into the fridge. So now it's early April.
He had as many as the date, which is 4/9. If I'm correct.
I was going to count on you guys to remember, because I didn't remember either. Next Thursday, right?
A week from tonight. We'll be setting up shop right now for a live show.
Come hang out.
DNP. Yeah, come hang out. Come chill. Come lob us some questions. Come drink some beers. I mean, come on.
What more could you ask for?
Like what more could you possibly ask for?
Yeah, you can't. You can't ask for any more than that. So shout out to Kyle. And it's not just the Colonel Lagers, by the way. It's my favorite, but they have he's got a boatload of different things you can drink there. So he's been helping us out, but we'll be back next week to bring you guys another episode. But if you're going to opening day, I bet the fellas will be checking in down there as well. So come say hi, like the video, comment something nice, and hit the subscribe button. All right. We'll catch you guys next week. But until then, we will catch you.